client. Okay, next case for argument is Thaningzin versus Board of Education, Mr. Duffin.
Morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rick Duffin, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Lynn Thaningzin. This is an employment discrimination, a race discrimination case that was decided by the district court on the defendant's motion for summary judgment. What the plaintiff is asking for here is that decision be reversed, in this case be remanded to the district court. First reason why the plaintiff asserts that the district court decision was improper is because there is conflicting evidence here that should have included summary judgment in this case. In proceeding on his claim, the plaintiff utilized the indirect burden shifting method. The first issue that was raised by the defendants in the district court with regard to the indirect burden shifting method was whether the plaintiff was qualified or whether he was meeting his employer's legitimate performance expectations. And there is conflicting evidence there that should be decided by a jury. Primarily what the plaintiff relied upon were his employment evaluations. The adverse employment action here took place in 2003. He was demoted from the position of head custodian to the position of building custodian. The plaintiff had been evaluated annually for the years prior to that adverse employment action. In 2002, plaintiff received the outstanding evaluation for job knowledge, for quantity of work and quality of work. He received exceptionally high marks. For the year prior to that, in 2001, he also received the highest rankings that were available to be given to him. In addition to that, there was oral testimony at his deposition from a school district employee who was involved in the evaluation process that Mr. Thaningzin was, in fact, qualified as a head custodian, that the elementary school where Mr. Thaningzin worked for a number of years was in good condition, and that Mr. Thaningzin should not have failed the certification test, which is at issue here. Now, the defendants claim that Mr. Thaningzin should have been demoted and that their action was proper here because Mr. Thaningzin failed a certification test. And this is really where the conflicting evidence lies. On one hand, we have the employment evaluations, we have the testimony of Ron Dugo, who says that he's qualified, and then on the other hand, we have the certification test, a hands-on test that the defendants claim that Mr. Thaningzin failed. Now, what's important to keep in mind here is that hands-on certification test tested the plaintiff on the very same tasks that he had been performing as a head custodian for a number of years and that he had been performing at the highest levels, tasks like plumbing, fixing faucets, testing a boiler, inspecting a playground.
So your view is we should take those qualifications as evidence that he is qualified for the job and not put any stock in the test, because after all, the test is what is before us. The fairness of the test is what is before us.
Well, I don't believe that the district court or this court should be deciding, you know, which has more stock in it, the evaluations or the...
No, my point is it's almost to rely on the McDonnell-Douglas test. We have to decide whether this fellow made a prima facie case, right?
Yes.
And then to do that, we have to make sure that he was qualified for the position, right?
Yes.
And it's I gather your point is it would be kind of a bootstrapping argument for us to rely on the test he failed as evidence he can't do the job, because that's exactly what's an issue in the case.
It is, and that's where we claim the discrimination took place.
So rather you think we should rely on evidence of how he was doing before the test, at least for purposes of applying the McDonnell-Douglas paradigm, am I right?
That's correct. That's correct. He had, as I was saying, he had been performing the tasks on the hands-on test were the same tests that he had been performing at the highest levels for a number of years. So the defendant's proffered reason for the employment action really is not credible here.
How do you answer the argument that He also failed the retakes. And having failed the retakes, isn't that evidence relevant and probative to his inability to do the job?
Well, there's two tests that were at issue that were involved here. There's the written test and the hands-on mm-hmm. test. In order to take the hands-on test, the custodians first needed to pass the written test. Mr. Thanongson passed the first written test, and then he moved on to the second stage, which was the hands-on
and
test.
And that's where you say he got set up.
That's where we say that the discrimination
took later tests and failed one or the other.
There were two subsequent tests. Two subsequent written tests. He was never allowed to retake mm-hmm. the hands-on test. The second written test that he took should not be considered by the court at all because it was in violation of a collective bargaining agreement, and that's the reason why all of the head custodians were permitted to retake the written test a third time. Now, the third written test he did not pass, and the reason it shouldn't even be considered, and it really isn't relevant here because the discrimination had already taken place. He had already passed the written test, and the discrimination took place.
Well, that doesn't make it irrelevant.
Well, I think it makes it less relevant.
It's evidence of his competence. It doesn't matter when it came.
And
or is your argument that it was tainted by the original discrimination?
I believe it was tainted by the original discrimination, and Mr. Thanongson testified at his deposition that he was upset. He didn't study for the retest. And the reason really is because here's an employee who had been working for a number of years, receiving extremely high evaluations, doing his job very well, and all of a sudden, you know, he's told that he can't perform the same task that he had been performing for a number of years, and he did not study for the retest, and he testified to that, and that's not at issue. And I believe that the written retest was tainted. And because there's conflicting evidence here as to whether he's qualified or not qualified, that should be decided by a jury.
What would be a typical question, so to speak, on a hands-on test?
A typical question, for example, there's an electrical ballast in the light socket, and he was asked
what?
To...
Electrical what?
It's ballast. Called an electric ballast. Uh-huh. It's basically the light socket, you know, uh-huh. where the light bulb goes into. And Mr. Thanongson, for one of the test topics, was asked to change the electrical ballast. And this is something that he would routinely do in his job. Mm-hmm. If a light went out in a classroom in his school, he would be the person responsible for going to do this. On the hands-on test, they'd simply ask him, change the electrical ballast, and he would have to do that.
Did any of the tests, written or practical, involve any test of language ability, either written or oral?
Well, of course, in the test is in English, and in the written test, he would have to be able to read English and respond, but that's as far as it goes in terms of
testing. What kind of questions
language.
Were these? Were they multiple choice kind of things, true and false, or did he have to, or were they what academics would call an essay type test?
I believe there was a mix of questions.
A mix of questions?
Some multiple choice. I believe there were some mm-hmm. questions where he had to actually write out the answers to the questions. It was a mix of questions.
Why I ask that is one of the criticisms that he received from the supposed discriminator was that he ought to improve his ability with the language. Now, that would be an appropriate comment for that man to make if language ability or lack thereof affected your client's score. On the other hand, if it did not, then it is an indicative of prejudice. Can you help me on that? I mean, one way
I
or another.
So.
Was there any indication that he failed any part of this test because of his inability with the language?
Not in terms of the hands-on test, no.
How about the written test?
In terms of the written test, Mr. Thanongson's ability to read, and he had been performing the job.
He
had been filling out work orders for a number of years.
And he passed the first test, am I right?
He passed the first written test, sufficient to move on to the second test. His English is not his first language. He does have some deficiencies in the English language in terms of reading and writing. He was able to pass the first test. He was able to perform his job fully, of course, in English for a number of years and received high evaluations. There was never any criticism for the years prior to Mr. Thanongson taking this hands-on test that would indicate
what
any...
What was his salary?
His salary, I believe, was $20 an hour approximately, and when he was demoted, he was reduced by $6 per hour.
And did he have any supervisory authority or work by himself?
He did not have any supervisory authority. He was the head building custodian for his elementary school, and he was the sole person at that elementary school.
Oh, when you say head building custodian, that's what made me ask. Mm-hmm. Does that imply there are subordinate custodians?
After the restructuring, after 2003, Mr. Thanongson was demoted to building custodian. Before that, he was the sole person at the school. The job title was head custodian, but he was the only custodian responsible for the school. If there were things beyond his normal job duties, then the school district would bring someone in. But
okay, thank you, Mr. Duffin. Your time has expired. Ms. Lowry?
If it please the court, my name is Sanders Lowry, and I'm here on behalf of School District U46 as well as Hanan Javits. Mr. Thanongson fails to satisfy the prima facie case because he could not meet the qualifications of a Group 5 custodian. Once the union and the school district decided to institute the certification testing in an effort to phase out the Group 5 custodian, that became a fundamental qualification for the position. And his inability to pass the examination, both the hands-on and the written portion, thus deems him unqualified for the job.
Ms. Lowry, isn't that exactly what we're here to determine, is whether that test was a good indication, a fair indication of his abilities or not. So how can we use the test to decide whether the test was in fact a legitimate, non-discriminatory test?
Well, Your Honor, the testing process itself, Mr. Thanongson has never contested that the process was a fair test. He passed the first written test and by only 5 points in order to move on to the hands-on test. And he has not established any evidence during the hands-on portion of the test that Mr. Javits or Mr. Dugo discriminated against him during that test.
But that is the issue in the case here, is it not? I mean, the plaintiff would not accept that assertion on your part.
That may be, Your Honor. But at this
Well, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what this whole case is about?
As whether or not he was discriminated against during
taking the practicum during the first round.
That's how he sees it. However, the school district did allow, under the collective bargaining agreement, to allow Mr. Thanongson to take the test a second time. The written portion of the test, he failed the second time, and as his counsel indicated, he refused to study for it and refused assistance from...
And what was the reason for allowing him to take the test the second time?
The testing program that the union and the school district had agreed to allowed for two chances. So the first time, if you failed, then you were allowed to take the test a second time.
So it wasn't to remedy any discrimination in the first time. It was simply that everybody got two shots at the apple.
That's correct.
Who devised the test?
The test was devised through bargaining, I believe, with the union and the school district. The third test... Mr. Duffin asserted that it was taken because the second test was given as in violation of the collective bargaining agreement. And what occurred there was between the two tests, there was supposed to be a six-month period. And the district administered the test to Mr. Thanongson 2 weeks shy of the expiration of that six-month period. So because of that mistake, it decided that it should allow, in discussions with the union, it should decide to allow Mr. Thanongson to take the test.
Was every maintenance person in the system tested?
Yes. Everyone who was classified as a Group 5 custodian was tested.
How many were those? Do you know?
Your Honor, I'm not sure of the exact number, but it was, I would say, approximately 30 custodians. It was a large number. So following his inability to pass the exams, again, renders him unqualified. The evaluations that Mr. Duffin referred to were evaluations that were done by the building principal. And certainly a building principal is not quite as up to speed on the technical aspects of a custodian's position versus individuals who were employed by the school district as the head of the custodial.
Was this intended to be a more objective than subjective test?
Yes, Your
Honor. Evaluation?
Yes. And in fact, too, when Mr. Thanungsen was administered the second or the hands-on portion of the test, it was administered by two evaluators, Mr. Javits as well as Mr. Dugo. And prior to that time, Mr. Dugo had had very little, if any, interaction with Mr. Thanungsen, as had Mr. Javits. And so for Mr. Dugo to say he believed he was qualified, his testimony to that is not relevant because he wasn't his supervisor and had not been overseeing his work for the years prior to the hands-on test.
Was Mr. Duffin correct that he wasn't permitted to take the hands-on test again?
He did not take the hands-on test again because in order to take the hands-on test, you had to score at least a 50 on the written test. And on the second written test, he scored a 46, and on the third written test, he scored a 39. So he was not allowed, pursuant to the agreement between the district and the union, to move on to the hands-on portion
of the
test.
What's curious about it is usually if you have two separate test components and you pass one and you fail the other, you're permitted to take the one that you failed over again.
Well, Your Honor, the decision for the testing scheme was developed by both the union and the school district, and this is what they set up, and in order they had to follow what they had agreed to, because otherwise if they hadn't, they would have drawn grievances from other individuals who hadn't been allowed to do the same thing. In addition to his inability to establish that he was qualified for the position, he hasn't been able to satisfy the prima facie case that a similarly situated individual was treated differently. He pointed to the individual who was asked to, or who became a Group 9 custodian, who was only at the school district or at this particular elementary school one day a week. They're not similarly situated, as that individual had to pass his own examination in order to be qualified for the Group 9 position.
Was this new testing scheme connected with a reduction in force?
It was connected with phasing out this particular job classification. They wanted to move to, there are several different levels of custodian at the school district, and they wanted to be able to streamline that due to financial constraints that the district has been facing.
So the answer to my question is yes?
Yes.
Thank you.
In addition to, he also, so he's failed to satisfy the prima facie case.
Well, how about Mr. Kane?
Mr. Kane, the district court correctly disregarded the scoring sheet of Mitchell Kane because it was an unauthenticated document, and it was presented in as an attachment to Mr. Duffin's response to our motion for summary judgment.
Question of authentication raised in the district court?
It was.
Was he given an opportunity to authenticate it?
Mr. Duffin had attached it to his response brief, in which we then replied. And he would have had an opportunity to authenticate it because of the, during the discovery process, because he had the test of Mr. Kane that we had provided and did not ask any other individual that he deposed, including Mr. Javits or any of the other, or Kathy McNamara, who also participated in the examinations, as to whether or not that was their testing sheet. And the sheet in question, he only asked Mr. Dugo about that sheet, and Mr. Dugo stated in his deposition testimony that it was not his testing sheet, and he had no independent knowledge of the handwritten notes that were on the sheet or what occurred during Mr. Kane's testing. So that should be disregarded by the court as evidence of a difference in treatment.
Is that it? Okay.
Unless there are any other questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lauer.
Thank you.
Mr. Duffin, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you. Just briefly, I have two brief points. One is with regard to the evaluations, the prior evaluations that were done by the building principal, and the question that was raised by counsel as to whether those are really valid because they were done by a principal as opposed to somebody who's in the building department. The fact is that building that Mr. Thanungsen had full responsibility for maintaining was in good condition. There were never any complaints about the building not being in good condition. And so when the building principal, the principal of the building, evaluates Mr. Thanungsen, what she's looking for is, are there complaints about his performance?
Yeah,
do the lights work?
Right? Could be lucky.
I'm sorry?
Could be lucky, right? Nothing bad had happened. That doesn't mean he's competent to deal with something bad when it does happen.
I would agree with the court if Mr. Thanongson had been doing the job for 6 months, perhaps for a year. The fact is he had maintained this building from 1996 through 2003 and never had any negative complaints about him. And Mr. Dugo testified, although Mr. Dugo did not have significant experience with Mr. Thanongson personally, he was in the building department, and he did have knowledge that the building was in good condition. The second point that I'd like to address is with regard to similarly situated individuals and Mitchell Kane. Counsel argues here and argued in the district court that the scoring sheet of Mr. Kane was unauthenticated. The fact is that that scoring sheet was produced by the defendants in discovery pursuant to the plaintiff's request for all scoring sheets. It was produced in the range of documents that they said were the scoring sheets. In response to interrogatories, one specific interrogatory that asked the school district to identify who had completed the Mitchell Kane scoring sheet, the school district answered that Kathy McNamara, supervisor, had completed that scoring sheet. That is authenticated. I did provide the district court with an affidavit in connection with the summary judgment motion with the plaintiff's response to it, attesting that that scoring sheet was produced, as I just explained to the court. The reason that there's no other testimony in depositions from the person who actually filled out the scoring sheet is because that scoring sheet was produced after those depositions. It was produced in time for Mr. Dugo's deposition, but the school district had not produced it previously, so we were not able to ask the other deponents about that scoring sheet.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Duffin and Ms. Lowry. Last case for argument is